There's a lot going on in my life right now, but I'm Amana. I am a recent graduate of the Spirit Rock Residential Teacher Training Program. There was 20 of us in our cohort. I am a core teacher at the East Bay Meditation Center in Oakland, California. I just like 4 days ago, I lived in Oakland. And now I am in Mount Shasta, right in the radiance of the mountain in a little place called Weed, California. I happen to be at my neighbor's house right now because things didn't go the way I planned them. My internet doesn't work. My cold water is not, my hot water is not running. The handle came off of my bathroom sink. And I'm over here at my neighbor's house, who have graciously allowed me to use their office for a marathon of talks and retreats that I'll be doing for the next month, almost daily. Hopefully, my internet will get up. I am a grandmother. I have 13 grandchildren. I have two great grandchildren and two really wonderful sons. And I don't know, that's enough of me for now. Daily life has been fraught with unpredictable and incomprehensible events. We are still in the unimaginable throes of the COVID virus. It continues to sweep across the world, killing millions of people. During the inauguration, we experienced an attempted uprising in the capital of the US. And louder cries of protest against violence and death of black, brown, and the myriad shades of colored bodies, queer, trans bodies, disabled bodies, women's bodies have been brought to the forefront of world consciousness. And now there's like this wave of terrorism against Asian and Asian American Pacific Islander communities, the elderly. And the most current killing of Dante Wright in Minneapolis just days ago, not very far from the place where George Floyd was murdered. These are all at the forefront of our hearts and minds. Before I really go into what I would like to talk about this evening, I want to invite us at this time to participate in a moment of silence, to hold in our hearts a tender compassion and caring for the families and communities that are suffering the physical, mental, and emotional harm and loss of life from these attacks. And also to bring our awareness and our attention to the truth that this touches all of us, even though it may not be our families. We witness, we experience, we feel in our bodies all that happens around us because we are all interconnected. So, I invite you at this time to just come into a moment of silence. And I'll ring the bell at the end of that period. Just hold loving kindness, compassion, and tenderness for all of the suffering, for all of the confusion and the chaos. I think it's lost in this practice. This practice that has migrated to us from so far away. And I invite you to remember the origins of our practice in its many forms and to acknowledge that this wisdom travels to us from an oral tradition that was practiced 2,600 years ago, recited and preserved for over 500 years. See, things don't always go the way you planned. I left my house to come here hoping I'd get a better signal. I'm in the woods, so I hope that we hold on here, okay? Be patient. Patience is a virtue. So, as I was saying, here we are, a bag of liquid. Loosely held together by threads of flesh that are made up mostly of water. And we are stuck fast to like this rapidly spinning earth by the phenomena of gravity. And miraculously, sometimes we must be walking and standing upside down as the earth is spinning around and turning towards the sun. We have very little volition, almost none, at the functions of our bodies. The breath breathes the body, 12 to 20 breaths per minute. And most of the time, we're not even aware of breathing. The heart beats on its own 60 to 100 times per minute, and our digestive tract functions on an autonomic system that absorbs nutrients that we need for life. And the body releases the stuff we don't need. We experience emotions of great pleasure as well as great pain and suffering, all through the six sense spheres, all happening in the body. All show up internally in this magnificent vessel. And our lives in the scope of time are merely a flicker of an eyelash. Generally, unless we are fully in tune with our bodies, we do not know when our fire is going to be extinguished. The First Noble Truth states that there is suffering. The Pali word is dukkha. Usually translated as suffering, but also can be thought of as just a general unsatisfactoriness. Dukkha is the suffering of internal and external pain, of dislike, of aversion. It's the oppression, unfairness, and stress that's inherent in this physical, worldly life. And our practice aims us towards being liberated from this suffering and dissatisfaction, not as a way to slip into delusion or turn our gaze away from what is arising, but as a way to see it with some lucidity. To be free of reactions that have been conditioned by past experiences. We are practicing to be free of this conditioning. Zen priest Zenju Earthland Manual states in an article in a book called Dharma, Color, and Culture that this freedom is a way to live life awake and full of feeling, full of feeling, all feeling. When we close the heart down from feeling anything, it's indiscriminate. It doesn't care if it is closed off from displeasure or joy. When we put that barrier up, we don't let anything in. So much we are in trance. So much we are numb. So freedom is to be awake and full of feeling, pleasant and unpleasant. So fully understanding the first noble truth that there is suffering, that dissatisfaction exists, that we, every one of us, will experience it in some daily and even moment-to-moment form during our lifetime. This lays one of the most significant and foundational underpinnings of our practice. And to understand this fundamental truth is to prepare the soil of our existence for living a life that is awake and full of feeling. When we embody an internal knowing of this truth, one that is embedded in the body, when we embody that, embedded in a way that transcends conceptual pragmatic thinking, we become lifted out of the worldly perception that suffering is personal. It's not personal. And you know, there is an intellectual, knowing, like I know one day I'm gonna die. And then there is knowing that in the body, where the body knows it. That's a whole nother realm. It's non-cognizable, it's not conceptual. It's rooted in the body, it's an embodiment. And this is the kind of waking up that we practice for, to know it in our bodies. This realization actually removes the ideas that give rise to the notion that disappointment, change, impermanence, and disaster are directly aimed at our hearts. My undergrad work was in child development. And one of the researchers we studied was Jean Piaget, one of the pioneers of early childhood development studies. He investigated the perceptions of children and found that children around the ages between 2 and 7, at some point in their development, most likely believed that the sun and the moon followed them as they moved through the world. You know, I can remember having this same perception as a child. You know, my mother driving us around and me looking out the window at the sun and it following me and, shining its warmth down on me and comforting me. And everywhere I went, there it was just following me around. So, this like egocentric perception is a worldview. It manifests in the undeveloped mind of a child. Understanding the first noble truth matures our insight and removes us from the childlike perception that disaster, unsatisfactoriness and unhappiness are personal. That the heavenly messengers of sickness, old age, and death are personal attacks on a body that should perpetually remain in a state of youthful vitality. I can tell you that quite regularly I am upset with my body. because it is not acting the way. It's not going the way I planned it. It's just not acting right. But that means that I haven't embodied that intellectual notion that yes, my body is aging. So when we shift our conditioned perspective of dukkha, suffering, dissatisfaction, as something personal towards the impersonal, we can see it as a doorway that opens us up to experience rather than closes us off from the life that is awake and full of feeling. You know, as humans, we seem to be creatures living in the infancy of our potential. You know, we have these lofty ideas of how civilized and how advanced we are. But are we really? Deepening our practice of the Dharma grows us into maturity. It grows us into understanding the depth of our relation and our connection to each other. It grows us into understanding that I am you and you are me. It grows us into a place of loving this moment of life that we have in the trajectory of time. And that maturity manifests as sila, which is ethics, panya, which is wisdom, and samadhi, which is a unified and collective mind that frees us from being imprisoned in our own conditioned habits and offers us purposeful intent of our actions in the world. May we be free from the prison of our stories. Sila, Panya, and Samadhi are the three channels of the Eightfold Path. You know, learning to be aware of what is arising, what is becoming activated within the body, and taking the pause to investigate, to examine, to witness that arising allows us to access the truth of our experience. And this was part of my guidance for those of you who could hear me to notice what's arising. Particularly those things that are sticky and they're recurrent and you can't get them out of your head. They're like knocks on the door, like, hey, I need some attention here. And so much I have been taught to just kind of, you know, go back to the breath or go back to whatever my anchor is. And there are so many doors to meditation. But I'm really trying to learn how to be with what is there, how to be with it. And sometimes I have to work with it, offering it things, kindness, compassion, love, tenderness, attention, kind attention. Sometimes, like a child, it only needs some kind attention. Writer, Dharma teacher, badass, excuse my French, Ruth King, defines dukkha of life experiences as not personal, not perfect, and not permanent. So, you know, when we practice, we're taking a pause. Taking the pause. Embracing the space in between the arising and the reaction, that pause, that in between the line place, allows us the latitude to separate any knee-jerk reaction from the truth of the moment. Allows us to take a little bit of inventory. Allows us to investigate, is this really about me? Is the sun really following me? Is this thing that happened really directed at me? Am I seeking a perfect experience based on my idea of what perfect is? I mean, hey, I just knew that, the hot water was going to be running. I mean, come on now. How can the hot water not be running? And also allows us to investigate the permanence of things. Maybe this is going to pass. Yes, certainly it is. Will this last forever? Nothing lasts forever. Nothing. Nothing. I'm having a little choke up right now because I realize that when people take their life, they think that whatever it is they're experiencing is going to last forever. That's how severe that concept can be of thinking things are permanent. Nothing is permanent. So, in this state of inquiry and discernment, we are able to respond skillfully to the truth of the moment. Our practice offers us attunement to all that arises within our heart, mind, and body in ways that do not promote the knee-jerk reactions, the reactions that blind us to the momentary truth of our experience. But let me be clear. All of this is not to say that pain is not actually experienced in the body, that individuals and communities are not targets of violence and oppression. This is true. This too is a truth that comes to us from many directions, both internal and external. So now we're into, the relative and the universal. There is inevitable illness and disease that will affect our fragile bodies. There is injustice and violence in the world that is real. There's no doubt. And our dukkha, our suffering, is based on how we take in what we experience. Because these things do exist. We're both protected and beset by our internal autonomic and sympathetic systems that automatically store, draw to memory, and map conditioned reactions that are designed to enhance our physical survival. Knee jerk. Our bodies are repositories of stored experiences and corresponding reactions that can become activated even at the suggestion of encountering an experience of harm that we've suffered in the past or that we've witnessed. So, as we seek to create a world of peace We are charged with cultivating the prowess of pausing. We're practicing this every time we sit or lay or stand or walk. As we offer service within our communities and with each other in our shared growth on this path, we have a responsibility to know how to access the wisdom inherent in the pause, to live in an awareness of what has arisen, or even more subtly, what is arising even before it manifests on the horizon. And in order to make ourselves more available to each other and to those that we serve and those we love, we must learn to embrace the pause and to discern when there is real and present danger, when we are causing harm, whether intentional or as a residual impact of our actions. This is what is meant by seeing clearly. You know, when we have cultivated this type of discernment, we're able to sidestep the transference of emotions from others into our own flesh and psyche. Because we're receptacles. You know, we pick up energy. We are energy. And truly, there's no space between us. We're all connected, even in this space that looks like a void, that looks like nothing is happening there. I'm sure you all know when someone gets mad or angry, something happens to you too. Someone is laughing, something happens to you too. So when we've cultivated this type of discernment, we are able to be fully present and to make wise and skillful decisions, not actions that are piggybacked on what others have done or what others have said, but we're able to discern what's skillful, and we're able to protect ourselves and others from the potential harm of compassionless reaction. The knee jerk. And as an added bonus, we're able to gain insight into the underlying motivations that drive reaction. In that pause. And many times, we will find that those motivations are fueled by an undertone of our own hatred, greed, and delusion. None of us get to escape that. You know, you know, I really like to think that, you know, I'm like, so great. I just have the love for the world. Until I did a meta retreat and went through, you know, myself and the benefactor and the good friend and the person you don't know. And then I rolled up on, at that time, we were calling them the enemy, but I rolled up on the difficult person. And guess what? I did not want them to be happy. I did not want them to be safe. I did not want them to be protected. I did not want them to have a life of ease. I did not want them to be free from suffering. And let me tell you, I was devastated to see myself true. So, you know, when we take those pauses, Sometimes we find that those motivations are fueled by an undertone of our own hatred and greed and delusion. And it can show up like this, in the desire to return the hurt that we have received from someone else. You know, the revenge, the retribution. I mean, that's all in our culture. You know, it can, you know, that's hatred. And it can show up when we try to impose our opinions on others. They have their opinion, we have ours, and you know, we're going to impose our opinion on others. You know, that's our desire. There's something greedy about that. And it can show up like when we're in an interaction and we just can't let go of something because we're trying to complete a reaction or response from some similar situation that happened in the past that remains unresolved, and we're going to try to resolve it in this situation. That's delusion. And those are just some examples of these undertones of greed, hatred, and delusion that show up for us. Nobody wants to look at that. I know I don't. But you know, this is part of the work of becoming free. These are the three poisons that we practice to be free of. So, you know, when we're able to rest in the pause between the stimuli of the external object that connects with and sometimes collides with the sense doors of sight, smell, taste, touch, hearing, and thinking, as uncomfortable and unpleasant as it may be, we are put in a position to interrupt the habitual reaction, to investigate the assumption, to deconstruct the perception, to notice the activation of past experiences, and to find the wise response that does not contribute to the internal harm of numbness, disassociation, self-judgment, self-loathing, or the external harm of using the body or tongue as a weapon. We're able to practice self-care and create boundaries that do not block the heart from receiving the gift of life that may come along with what is painful or dissatisfying. You know, we only have a moment of time on this earth. Just a moment to experience the miracle that we have all been born with. During this time, and we have found each other in this place under this sky, in the radiance of this sun, in the radiance of Mount Shasta. How often are we attuned to the sacredness of our being? We're sacred beings. To the rarity of this experience. How often are we attuned to that? And to the immensity of our spiritual power. We have the capacity to transform our hearts, to excavate and remove the hardened cores of hatred and greed, to lift the veil of delusion and ignorance, and to envision a new world and way of being. And this process begins in our own hearts. Our trials, our pain, our suffering are signs that we are alive. Not something to push away. I think the question of the day is how do we create a new system that makes the old one obsolete, rather than trying to tear down the systems that aren't really working? How do we create something new, never before seen? How do we activate that intuitive creativity of innovation and begin to th not reform or think in the same concepts and ideas that are already out there and just kind of like shift them around a little. Something never before seen. This is what we need. Never before thought about. Something that has never existed. And how many of you believe that that's even possible? This is truly the work we must do for our present lives and the lives of those who will stand on our shoulders for the next generations. We need a remembering of where to place value. A remembering of the value of life, of happiness, of joy in living. With my broke down body and everything, just have joy in that. Of reclaiming the natural state of ease in the body. The natural state of the body is ease. That's the natural state. We need a remembering of the embodiment of love and compassion. Herein are the places where profit and exploitation has taken up residence and colonized our hearts, taken our focus to consuming rather than loving, to acquiring, to achieving, to finding success. What is that? The only success there is the intimacy that we can create between each other. The knowledge that we belong to each other. These are the places we must return to. And above all, we must remember our connection to the earth. As my teacher, one of my teachers, Larry Yang, said, and I'll never forget it, we're not people who walk on the earth. We are earth that walks. And only for a moment. And the earth will reclaim our bodies. So, remembering Sati. Being awake and alive in the body. This is the true purpose of our practice. The true purpose of inner reflection and self-awareness. And make no mistake, the purpose of the practice is not to reduce stress or to find bliss. These are just residual benefits. Ours is a practice that excavates the deepest crevices of the mind-heart through the loving awareness of mindfulness meditation, the development of ethical conduct, and the cultivation of the two wings of wisdom and compassion. I think I'm done. I think that if I say anything else, I'll be rambling. But before I go, I would like to offer a dedication of merit. And then we can break out into those groups. Today, we have generated good deeds that entitle us to a spiritual reward. As an act of generosity, we offer the merit generated from our actions today to radiate outward into the world at large and to land upon and rest with those who are less fortunate than we are. May it land in the hearts and minds of those who are steeped in suffering, those who are stalked and hunted, those who are hungry and imprisoned in the trance of ignorance. We offer the merit of our practice to all creatures above us, below us, to the right and to the left. The seen and the unseen, the known and the unknown, and the unknowable. May all beings be free from suffering. Thank you for your kind attention. Thank you for your practice in the world.